guys. Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Welcome to the blown up car suppository.
Suppository. Might as well.
That's the thing that goes in your
butt. It's right up your butt. That's probably how you feel.
That is basically what's happening. I guess I should have said depository.
That's a Freudian
depository.
Yeah, was that a moth on your microphone?
Yep. It's going to be 90 degrees today.
Yep.
So I've got the garage shut.
Right.
Air conditioning is on.
You have your AC going. Okay.
Well, it was going.
Is that
going
to keep up?
Yeah, it does. It'll keep it down to probably 80 in here.
Okay.
You know, it's not an insulated garage or whatever, but it'll.
Yeah.
I'm warm right now because I have to turn it off. Otherwise, it sounds like we're in a wind tunnel.
And we're going to get more warm because we always get heated while we're doing this.
Yeah, I do get sweaty.
Always ends up.
I get sweaty and I get sweaty.
And I like your background. You have some nice lighting on the Driven to Death car, which we're going to talk quite a bit about. And
yep,
so,
my light fell
how
on the
do
floor,
people.
So there it is.
Oh, I like it. How can people see that? Because the majority of people still are not watching us, they're only listening to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think. Spotify doesn't give those stats, but most people still listen on Apple Podcast. That is still the vast majority for this platform, which is fine. It's also on YouTube and Spotify if you want to watch stuff like that. Yeah, if you want to
see our ugly mugs.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really needs that, but hey, it's the algorithm. You got to feed all aspects of it, and it's easy and it's easy. Plus, I get to see the main reason we do video is so I can be at home. Did my air conditioner? Can you hear my air conditioner?
No.
Good.
Nope.
Thank God. I'm going to leave it on then.
No, you're going to be cool.
I hope so, man. I hope so.
Yeah.
It's so I can see you and we can be at home and do this and not have to pay $1,000 a month for a studio. So
since
we're doing video, we might as well just record it and put it up. And there
might
you go.
As well. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a lot going on.
Oh, jeez. I mean,
right?
The rally is like all consuming right now. The rally and things that we're doing, which are
the ancillaries to the rally.
Everybody
knows
we're doing a film festival. We've done the film festival the last couple
of years. Everyone knows we're doing the scholarship program,
which is building the car is getting huge, and the car is like kind of being a little bit of a problem.
No, we haven't yet.
What? No, we haven't announced what it is. I just talked to my friend Mike. He is the car is over with him at Leichbau.
Okay.
So if you could, I mean, if you really want
to know. What, you're going to tell people to go over there?
we already have said where it is.
Yeah.
And the guys at Leichbau are building the car. I'm really, really excited about it. Khalil and Byron there are both extremely talented dudes. I love their style. They're going to be, I know that Byron's coming on the rally. I don't know if Khalil is. And then, of course, Mike Burrows from StanceWorks is right next door, and he's building his Urquattro. And is going to be bringing that on the rally as well. So, there's all those things going on over there. And, we're going to be doing some stuff with StanceWorks with the film festival and everything, some partnerships, some things coming down the road. You know, I can just say that I haven't said much about it all because we're not quite ready to announce it. But hey, podcast listeners, you guys are awesome. You're a core. We'll give you a little bit of a little drip.
So, someone told me I need to give you grief.
Why?
Because you went to go get this motor and you rented a boring truck.
What do you mean I rented a boring truck? What was I supposed to do?
I bought
to go get
a boring Audi. And so they were like, well, that's the same thing.
Is it?
Yep.
Honestly.
No, it's not.
But okay. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I did finally sell the Audi yesterday.
Thank God.
That's the only reason I wanted to bring that up.
So I rented it. So it was either, here were my options. My friend Jake. With a cool car and a trailer,
should
do a road trip with me and go get it.
Yes.
But
you gave me less than 24 hours notice.
Yeah. So what? You could have done all your work from the passenger seat. You could have. Could have went. But you're lame and you didn't. So
yes, that's sure.
That is what it is. You have a kid.
Sure.
The kid's a toddler. Could have sat in the back. No problem. You could have done it.
Right.
You didn't. You're boring. You're lame.
Back from 6 hours to Road America.
Hours. Who cares? I did the whole round trip in a day. It was fine.
It's fine.
The other alternative was I thought about taking the Mercedes, the brown one, because it has a trailer hitch.
Okay.
Thought about taking your trailer with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has the plug on it as a Euro plug.
Sure.
So I would have had to have, I was thinking to myself, I can get an adapter. It's on Amazon. It's $30. It's going to take 2 days to get here. This motor is cheap. I need to go get it.
And how nice was it being in a brand new truck for like $100 that you don't have to worry about?
Honestly, I did not like the truck.
Oh, really? What was it? It was a new Ford F-150, right?
No, it was a brand new Silverado.
Oh, okay.
Brand new.
Yeah.
But like kind of like fleety.
Fleet
space,
spec. White, yeah, so total. Fleet. Yep.
It drove like a, it didn't drive like a truck.
Okay.
It didn't feel rugged.
Yeah.
It didn't feel trucky, you know, where okay. it's, and it also didn't feel like a car. It felt like it was trying to be all things.
Oh,
it's
like
trying
a
to
crossover.
Be comfortable. It's trying to be like a car. It's
so trucks are now crossovers.
I don't know. It was just, it was, I think too many people are driving trucks every day for their daily drivers and they don't really need a truck. So therefore manufacturers are being forced into making them livable as everyday vehicles.
I could
right?
see that.
You know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
So no, like, I definitely could see that.
I don't think if I think of the truck that, you know, I grew up around, which was like an old F-150, it was a truck. You know, it had a bench seat. It had, it was rugged.
It was very utilitarian. And that was it.
It was stiff. It was bumpy. But it did its fucking job, right?
Right.
It did its job as a truck. I feel like this thing, it was fine. I'm sure it does a great job as a truck. I'm sure that they've vanillaized out all the truck things, but it still does the truck things. I'm sure that's wonderful for Fred, who basically drives his Harley on the weekends and he drives this truck down to his cubicle job so he can still feel like he's kind of a man with his truck, but he never actually uses it as a truck. But his
why does Fred deserve all this grief? Poor
because
Fred.
This is the type
he's
of
just
person.
Trying to make ends meet.
He comes home, he's no longer drinking Bud Light, he's drinking Coors Light, he's got
true.
His truck, he wants to feel special.
Well, he has
he's
to pull his
chair.
Little Alumacraft down to the lake every weekend too.
That's true. So he can troll around for fish and I'm just thinking of the avatar of a guy who drives a truck now. And it just I've been listening to a lot of country music lately and like mostly newer folky style country music.
Not
mainstream. Every once in a while I go and I dabble in vintage. And there's a lot of talk about there's one song, I can't remember who it is. Maybe the outro will be the song. The song is and it'll be the outro. But it's this song about a guy who really, really misses driving around in his grandpa's truck. And he just wants to be able to drive with grandpa again and go on a road trip with grandpa in grandpa's truck. That Silverado, nobody's going to feel that way about that Silverado. There's no way.
Yeah.
No, there's no way.
I can see that.
With that thing going ding, 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 every time I like for 1 second put a tire on the dash line, it's freaking out. You have to turn that shit off.
Yeah, lane assist.
It's got all these whizmos and doosnies.
Which is surprising for like a base level truck. But again, that goes to the fact that they're trying to make it
standard. It's becoming standard. The controls for all of it were kind of bad. The car play was shitty. The layout in the interior was not very driver oriented. It was kind of just a flat dash and the screen was flat facing like the center of the vehicle rather than being
towards no one. Yeah.
Towards nobody. Like, well, we have to make everybody be able to see this so no one can see it. I really love, this is a good segue. I really love the way that BMW did things in the 80s and 90s.
It was the cockpit
I'm talking about.
Yes.
Where everything is turned towards the driver.
Exactly.
And if you're a passenger, it's just like, F you.
Meh.
F this guy. Sit over here with your glove box. That's probably falling off and leaning on your door card. But like, let's put you over here. And then you have your vents are kind of pointing. Even the center vents are pointed more towards the driver.
Towards the driver.
Because it just doesn't.
Well, it makes sense. Most time when you're in a car, it is just you.
Yes.
I would say
the
vast majority
have it not be that way, but.
Right. But no, from a design perspective, I do really like it. And that makes a lot of sense.
It was a driving machine, right? Now it's a crossover machine.
Yeah.
I don't
marketing.
I think the way the dashes are now, the vents are more, it's not the same way. It's not the same way where everything is turned.
And we can get to the BMW fiasco here in a second. But you were talking about Grandpa's truck.
Oh, yeah.
My truck.
Oh, yeah. What have you done? Okay. So we'll get there.
Let's do it.
So when I was at Road America, did I already say that I sold everything?
What do you mean everything?
Everything off that car sold. Intake manifold sold, cylinder head, valve cover, cams, valve springs, all as a package. Gone, sold it.
What about the block? You don't care about that.
It's what's interesting is that block is actually kind of valuable because it's the high compression block. So if someone wanted to like rebuild it, they could, but I'll probably just scrap it because I don't feel like dealing with trying to sell an engine block.
It's too hard.
If it was good, it would be easier. Anyway, so I sold all that stuff within an hour.
Wow.
It was gone like that. I had one guy that was really interested right away. So I gave him preferential treatment, and then he ended up buying it. But it was like, and as soon as all the Europeans woke up, all the people from Europe were like, oh my God, I'll buy it. What do you like? Can I?
And then you have to deal with the international shipping if that were the case. God,
I wouldn't send a cylinder head international. Manifold's a big deal, but
someone bought your carburetors.
I have the carburetors.
Yeah.
And the guy didn't buy the carburetors with him. And he did go, the velocity stacks come with the manifolds, right? And I go, yeah, no, those go with the carburetors. And I think the carburetors with the velocity stacks probably worth around $1,500 to $1,700. Velocity stacks are really cool. Velocity stacks are not cheap. They are actually, quite
expensive. Those are custom.
Yeah, these are custom made.
Yeah,
these are custom made, 3D printed. And then my buddy Jake goes, I could use those carbs.
Yeah.
And then for a second, I was like, for what?
On what? Like, what the hell? Yeah. And I don't know why I've like lately, I think with my frustration with the 944 that I worked on a little bit, I've been like, I really want to work on a simple vehicle. And I was like, I have that. I have this truck, 64 C10. And it's funny how much interest I mentioned it the other week on the podcast. Everyone's like, oh, let's see it. I want to see it. So I started a build thread over on Discord.
Oh, on the Discord. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm kind of going through the history of what I've done so far.
All I hear on social is, I miss forums. Forums were great. Yep. I miss them. We have one.
That's literally what we're doing.
Overcrest Discord.
I have an entire build
project threads. It's all there.
Yep. Yeah. So
come hang out.
I'm like, you know what would be awesome is because our buddy Colin is like, you should put a period correct Corvette motor in that truck. That'd be so cool. And I'm like, you could, but you know what was awesome at the track? And we might've mentioned this. The best sounding vehicles were inline sixes out of anything.
They do sound good.
They sound so good. And the more I looked into the motor that's in this truck, it was new for 1962, that generation of truck. It was brand new.
So what is this known? What is this motor that's in your C10?
Yeah, it's an inline six. It is a overhead valve. The cam is still down low, so it's a pushrod motor. But
explain how pushrods work, because a lot of people.
So yeah, so when you think of,
so how does this work with the cam and where is the cam located?
Yes.
Boil it down. Don't go nuts describing this stuff. Sometimes you go too deep.
You're right.
Keep it basic.
Some people like that. Okay. Let's start with here's one of it. I'm going to reverse. So I'm starting with a flathead motor because this does correlate to how it's developed, right? So a flathead motor meant that the valves were basically on the same plane as your piston, right? They weren't overhead, you know, overhead valves.
Yep.
These were low. So where does your camshaft go on a flathead motor? It goes down low to operate the valves, right?
In the crankcase.
So traditionally, yes, your camshaft was always down in the crankcase, and there's a gear driving the camshaft off of the crankshaft. So when they went and realized, oh, we can get a heck of a lot more flow, efficiency, and power by putting the valves on top of the cylinder combustion chamber, they needed a way to operate that with the cam still being down in the crankshaft, crankcase.
Is the combustion chamber on a flathead completely in the cylinder head? It's like really dome.
Yep.
It's big, right?
A flat situation. Well, it depends. Yeah. So you can also, like, that's when Edelbrock started making their heads, which is funny because a head on a flathead is literally just a piece of, like, steel, like cast steel. Yeah. And they would just shape the dome different.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you had your spark plugs were straight down from the top still. That was the only component of a head on a flathead motor. And then there was, like, I think cooling ports in there too. Anyway, so a pushrod motor, you need to be able to actuate the valves, which are on the top of the head, and the crankshaft or the camshaft is still down low. So you literally have just these long rods that run off of your cam lobes. They operate up and down then, and you have a rocker, which operates same as a rocker on a lot of other overhead cam engines that pushes the valve down. So that's all that a pushrod motor is you have rods going all the way the length of the block.
And they still do, like the small block Chevy stuff is still pushrod operated,
which is crazy. And so if you want to do a high revving pushrod motor, you have to have light and very, very like strong pushrods that have no deflection or flex to them. Right.
They don't vibrate. You got to keep in mind, this stuff is moving thousands of times per minute.
Yeah.
If you have a rod, you ever take like a...
It's a lot of mass now.
Like a pencil? Hold on a second.
Oh, God.
Hello?
again, this is not visual for most people. UPS so he's here. Gonna
hold on. I'll be right there.
Let's ooh, now I can go in depth with everyone. Ooh, I'm gonna go so in depth. No. So, anyways, if you want to make a pushrod motor, the reason that most motors went to an overhead cam operation, in which case you need some sort of a timing belt or a timing chain to operate the cam, which is now far away from the crankshaft. The reason they went to that is it's easier and there's less mass to operate in order to get the valves moving up and down. Because keep in mind, the entire mass of the valve train getting there, the entire mass of the valve train when you have a pushrod motor,
I'm so sorry,
is much higher. Because you're moving the entire push rod along with the rocker actuator,
Jake,
and the
Jake.
We got valve it. Itself.
We got
you
it.
You also
right?
usually need a finger follower on the bottom towards the camshaft.
Stop. It's too much.
Anyway,
too much.
There you go. So yes, this motor, it's an inline six. They made four versions of this displacements of the motor. They made a 194 six-cylinder. This is all cubic inch. They made a 230 cubic inch, a 250, and a 292. 250 is a 4.1 liter, just to
inline
to make
six.
That.
That's big.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's big. Is that stroke or bore?
So here's what's interesting. These, a 230 and a 250, are both over square engines still.
Okay.
Which means the bore is greater. The piston is more wide than it is the stroke.
Yeah.
So that means they do actually have potential to rev. And here's what's also interesting about these motors. And this is what I like. Everyone's kind of like, no one paid attention to them because you could always just swap a V8 in, right? If you wanted performance, you'd go with a V8. But in Brazil, Argentina, etc., because of the displacement and tax rules, they didn't get V8s. So all of like the Chevelles, the Novas, the trucks over there ran these 250s. And they run these things out to 8,000-9,000 RPM.
Not with the rods I'm looking at. They don't.
No, you use carbon fiber
beefy
rods.
What?
They make carbon fiber push rods.
No, I'm talking about the actual rods. Connecting rods. The rods are massive. They're just...
Yes, so you do different rods that are lighter. But yeah, they can. You rev these things out because they're over square, and you lighten up the valve train. Even with still a pushrod engine, you can rev them out that high.
Here's
which is really cool.
Are NASCAR V8s pushrod?
They are. Yes.
Okay. Well,
and those run 8,500. Oh yeah,
absolutely. So it's
exactly.
possible. It's possible.
So it's possible.
Now here's the question.
Yes.
Your carburetor can't do that. You have a
you can't flow a
little downdraft, little
it's
little
a
sippy
single
straw.
Barrel Rochester carburetor that I had completely remanufactured because the bushings were all bad on it, and I didn't want to go nuts. I wanted to get the car running well, or the truck running well, which I did a couple years ago. So it is a single barrel with a just log manifold going in. But I was like, how cool would it be to have side draft Webers on this thing?
You told
one
me this
per cylinder.
Like 2 years ago. You were talking about this.
I was like, rather than doing a V8 swap, I just want to make it look cool, sound cool, have big carburetors hanging off the side. I love that. Because that was my favorite part of the Driven to Death car. Literally.
And there's nothing that sounds, and this is my personal opinion, which is usually accurate. There's nothing that sounds better than side draft carburetors. They sound incredible. I wish I would have gotten a better video of this thing. I have no idea what it sounded like outside the car. Yeah, I never really did it. Sad.
It sounds wild. I bought your carburetors.
You did?
Then we were like, well, what are we going to do for an intake manifold? Well, guys did this. And I was searching for a long time trying to figure out, because they used to make the exact intake manifold to put these side draft Webers on this block.
Yep.
But they haven't made them since like the 70s or 80s. Until I kept digging and calling these old guys. And they're like, oh yeah, well, Mike has a casting and he's making them now. I was like, what?
Mike.
Who's Mike? So I'm
Is
digging
that the
through
I sent
no
you?
Website. No, this was a he. I talked to him and he's like, oh, you'd want to do that. That's dumb.
Oh,
a four barrel flows better and you'll make more power on it anyways. I was like, okay, well, that's not the point. So I talked to Mike. Mike is partnered with Larry, and I talked to Larry because Mike I couldn't get a hold of. And Larry's like, oh yeah, that sounds like Jim or whatever, whoever I talked to. He goes, but it's side drafts. How cool is it? I was like, exactly. Larry gets
that's
it.
My guy.
Larry and Mike, so they're casting them. I'm still trying to get
I want to touch on that sentiment for a second.
Okay.
There is a point where there's two things. And you know, there's a my buddy Mike Burrows always says, it, what good is going fast if you don't look good doing it? And I also have a thing where it says, what good is going fast if you don't sound good doing it?
Yeah,
and
I agree.
I think there's, you have fast and you have cool, right? You have fast and cool.
Exactly.
And you can have fast and cool, and you can have cool and fast, but you can also just have cool and kind of fast. And if it's cool enough, it's still cool. But if it looks cool, like this car, when I first built the engine.
Yeah.
Hold on.
No, I'm letting you finish.
This car, when I first finished the engine, when you and I got it running for the first time and drove it around the block, it sounded incredible, but it was slow as balls.
Sure.
It was like rolling a bowling ball down a 1 degree incline. It just didn't do anything. It just was like, it sounded cool. So that was unacceptable. It's unacceptable. Okay. That's why I shit canned the motor, test the compression, got a new motor that was supposed to be great. And then it was I did almost 130 miles an hour in this car. It fucking moved, sadly.
And
so then
the
it was
cams,
cool
too.
And kind of fast versus cool and slow. So you cannot have something look awesome, sound awesome, and then have it be lame. That's why when Jeff did this livery on this car, I had to do something. I had to do
you
something
because
it couldn't look like this and then be boring. So you have to be careful with, like, if you put side drafts on that thing and it sounds sick, but it doesn't do burnouts, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, we have to figure that out. So for sure, we'll do that. The great thing, side tangent, parts for an old Chevy truck. Holy crap. So dirt cheap. So cheap. Oh, my goodness. So cheap. But the point, or what I wanted to comment on.
I'm looking at, like, all brand new rods.
It's like $4. Yeah.
$314.
Well, here's what's cool about this motor,
all
too.
The rods.
Here's what's cool about this motor. So your small block Chevy V8 is like the motor that everyone puts in everything. They made millions of them. Chevy was smart. They used the exact same rod length and piston diameter for these six cylinders as they did in the V8s. So you can use all of your, like, weird high compression, different stroke rod length, everything from the V8s that everyone makes and are dirt cheap and you get everywhere, and you can put them in this motor.
Do you know what the stroke is?
3 inches, I think.
I don't even know what that something. Means. I need that in 3 inches. I don't know what that is.
I don't know. I can look it up. It's, because the bore
76. So it's
spacing.
Like
spacing.
Okay, so you don't want to go much shorter than that.
Okay.
That's not a very
loose
big
torque.
Stroke. You must have big
pistons. 3.5 or something. I don't know. But
I'm just wondering if you could then get a little bit more displacement out of it.
I don't care about the displacement. I want the revs.
Yeah, but you
can
have the revs
and
the displacement.
To get the flow. Yeah.
I mean,
it's already 4 liters.
Yeah,
like that's
true.
Fine.
That's a lot.
Here's what I was going to say about looking cool, sounding cool versus going fast.
Yes.
If we wanted to go fast, we wouldn't be choosing these platforms anyways. And you know what I mean? Like, it's not an old Chevelle with a big block or like a new Enter supercar name here, right?
Going fast is extremely easy.
I think it's overrated too, because what are you doing with that?
I don't know if it's overrated. Going fast is fun. It's very, very,
it's
very fun.
Yes. But even especially this day and age, no matter how much you push and like twin turbo a big block and like put a ton of power into something, you're still going to get smoked by the Tesla Model S at the stoplight.
That's true.
Every time.
And
so
and
it's
another
kind
issue.
Of.
Is like it's like drugs, you know. You start taking.
It's a slippery slope.
It is like your first little rock of crystal meth feels really great, and then if you take the same amount of crystal meth, I've never done crystal meth. By the way, just to be clear, so this is like hypothetical. A little bit of crystal meth at first. By the time you've taken it 10 times, you need a lot more, and it is the same thing with horsepower.
Oh, you go the horsepower fast, like, tolerance. It's the horsepower tolerance.
It is.
You build up a tolerance.
You build it up, and then pretty soon that thing that you built that's really fast, you're like, damn it, I got to put a bigger turbo
doesn't
on this
it.
Thing, or I
need
to chip it and do higher this, and
I need
cams, I need compression, I need to change the gear ratios, I need to go faster.
Yes.
And it never ends.
Exactly.
And pretty soon, you're just like crystal meth, you're dead.
Wow. You're dead, or your bank account is one or the other.
Yeah, your bank account. Your bank account.
So,
Larry, you have to draw that line. You can't. Yeah, you can't. You have to be like cool, chasing power. I find the the esoteric, enigmatic part of building something cool and making it unique and special, like your build that you're doing, is far more interesting than going fast. Because it's an exercise in taste, in culture, in creativity, in execution. It's all these things built together to make something cool and kind of fast versus just throwing an enormous turbo on something and going down to the track, and which is neat. It's just not my thing.
Sure. Yeah. Or in this case, putting the V8 in it that everyone else does.
Exactly.
So my boring, what I'm looking easy forward to is
no challenge, an old no sacrifice, patina, no toil.
An old patina truck, right? And if you lift the hood, everyone's expecting some small block V8 in it, and you're going to see just a stack of side drafts within velocity stacks. So
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
and the reason, awesome. I'll just circle back to Larry, right?
Did you
Larry,
order the manifolds?
Guy that gets it. No, I'm waiting from for Larry to get me like the payment link. And so I need to call him after this. I'm writing
why don't
that
you
down.
Send him a, he's going to want you to send him a check. I bet
he did
Larry
actually
wants
say
check.
Money order. Yes, check or money order, which I love. Yeah. But anyways, Larry was talking about this other guy who's like, oh, well, we don't make those anymore because they don't make power. You got to just put a four baler on and you can get our manifold forward for that. And Larry is like, well, yeah, that sounds like him. He doesn't get it because this is just cool. And I go, yeah, besides, if you're chasing power, we wouldn't be doing it with a six-cylinder instead of a V8. Because the six-cylinder Chevy guys, it's kind of like a counterculture, right?
Sure.
Anything this vintage that's a Chevy, you're just going to put a V8 in to hot rod.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I kind of like this whole like little micro, this area of guys that I've stumbled upon that are trying to make these sixes like rev high and go fast, and it's really cool. So
you're gonna have
that's
to do
what I'm gonna
things,
be
though.
Slowly
I
working
mean,
on
what do you
yeah so
you
here's the plan
speed, you need a different transmission
I have
think.
Yeah, here's the thing, an S10 T5 bolts right in.
I don't know what
bolts
a T5
right out.
Is that a manual?
It was put in everything. Yeah, it was the five speed. The Mustang used it, the Chevy S10 used it, Camaro, everything used the T5, Tremec T5 transmission. It's just the five-speed American transmission that went in everything.
And it bolts on.
It's great. Bolts right up.
Worked
bell
the clutch,
housing,
the pressure plate, all that stuff. Just
the bell housing of, yeah, this motor. Or
what actuates
the
clutch on that?
It is a lever. It's a push, like a rod.
So it's a cable.
Linkage.
A cable pulls
There's
the
no
thing,
cable.
Or is it...
It's literally a rod with bell cranks, like the 911.
I like that. That probably has good feel. I bet that feels good.
Well, right now it's just a long, you know. But
well,
yeah,
right now you've
good
got
feel.
A situation. But like when you have like a nice clutch in there and a nice pressure plate.
So 5-speed that'll feel good shifting, can actually use gears. And the rear end is like a 12-volt rear end that everyone puts in their hot rods. And it's like the rear end to use. And you can just get a quick like limited slip and different
gear
ratios.
I thought you said
12,
and I think everybody else thinks you said 12-volt. It was like a 12-volt rear end. Is this going to be a hybrid?
Bolt. Yeah, no. They call it the 12-volt, right?
Got it.
So it's the big rear end. Yeah, so it's like it's super easy to do this. And that's going to be my plan.
So what is the compression ratio of this motor stock?
I think it's like 8.5.
Okay, so very low.
So, yeah. So here's my other thought is you can get the 192 cubic inch cylinder head and guys bolt that on and immediately bump their compression to like,
you lose
half,
the displacement, but
no,
you gain the compression.
You don't lose displacement because you're just making the combustion chamber on the top smaller.
So
remember,
that is going to change the displacement.
Displacement is bore plus times stroke. It has nothing to do with the top. Swept volume has to do with, no, that's still bore times stroke.
I think you're
it's
lose
just
a
combustion
bit of
chamber.
Yeah, but the combustion chamber is part of the entire volume of air.
That's not how you measure displacement, though. No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Displacement is everything besides the combustion chamber.
Got it. Okay. I didn't
know
that. That's
the variable. Yes. So, yeah, it decreases the combustion chamber, which increases compression. So I thought maybe I just do that, since I'm probably going to want to do, you know, different.
Just here's the thing. Here's what I'm worried about.
It can spin out of control real quick.
You need to be able to, and this is a good segue into this pile of shit right here. You need to be able to maintain momentum.
Yes.
Because if you take that thing apart and you don't have this, like, you need to be able to continue to work. Because if you don't continue to work and continue to have the projects to keep you active and keep you busy, you will lose interest. You'll forget what you've done. And then it becomes a hill that you have to climb versus, you know.
So here's my plan, right? I got the plan. The plan is finish and sell the 951 this fall. That's when it's being for sale. It's gone. This fall.
Okay. What do you mean this fall?
Get it running in the next month.
Get it running next week and be done with it.
That's okay. Yes. But I'm giving myself a little time because once I get it running, there's probably going to be things
to... Fall is 3 or 4 months away. What's wrong with you? You have... Come on. Get the thing done.
Get it running. Get it on the road. And then there's going to undoubtedly be little things that need to be ironed out, right? So I'm going to iron things out and get it for sale. Get it listed. Give myself plenty of time to sell it so I can get what I want out of it.
Okay.
And once that's gone... It'll be close to winter. What I'm going to do is enjoy the truck as it is, blah, blah, blah. Put the truck over in storage, pull the motor, bring the motor over here, and that's what I'll work on for the winter.
That's
and I can be on a stand.
That.
It can be right there. Why?
I don't
what
like.
What don't you like?
I don't like having a separate storage facility for cars because it is an impedance because you're going to need the truck there. You'll be like, oh, does this fit? What about this? Where's this going to go? And the truck is somewhere else. The motor's here.
Well, maybe
not
I'll just bring
idea.
The truck over in the third stall. Fine.
Just have the truck there.
I'll have the
truck
there.
So
trying to give myself
in
room.
And out if you need to.
Yeah.
If it's in a different
but,
place.
Yeah, that'll be...
I don't understand how people do it where they have a shop where they go to work on their car. That just seems like a hurdle to working on something. Oh, I have to leave to go work.
Most people... Yeah. I was going to say, most people can't just go in the garage anyways. And, you know, you have to like basically, okay, this is what I'm doing on Saturday. Like you schedule it ahead of time.
Sure.
You have to plan for it.
Well, that means that you've made too many other poor decisions in your life.
Yes, 100%.
You've made yourself too busy.
Yes.
You've forced yourself into being too busy. Anybody that says I'm too busy needs to work on their time management.
Correct. It is a choice and you just need to own that. I agree with that. So anyways, what I'm saying, long way to say that is that that's going to be the winter project.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fun. I'm all for it and I'm
excited for something cheap, old, simple to work on. Not vacuum line nightmare from the 1980s that is the worst car to work on, period.
Yeah, there's this weird period of time where, you know, carburation was bad because the fuel economy. So everybody went to these new things where the entire computer, there's Hondas where there's no computer, but it's all vacuum solenoids.
Yeah.
Like these crazy systems.
A lot of Japanese, like Mitsubishi stuff too at the time.
Yeah, is like that. So that period of time for fuel injection is super poor. Not good.
Right.
Well, so,
and then
yours
Europeans
is
went
kinda
CIS,
like,
which
it's
isn't
getting
a whole lot.
CIS is okay. Yours is getting a little bit better. And then once you get into OBD1.
Yep. Anything with a MAF is usually good.
It gets a lot better. It's that interim period between like OBD1 Motronic style stuff. And then carburetors. It's everything in the middle there where everything was trying to be figured out. There was a lot of investment.
Everyone was
research.
Doing their own thing, too. Like, there was different methods to doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Like the 951 had the barn door, they call it, where instead of a mass airflow sensor
like
that's electronic,
or whatever.
It's literally just a barn door that opens,
on a weight.
Which is similar to CIS. Yep.
It's so a mechanical MFI, or a mechanical MAF.
Correct. Yes, exactly.
Is what it is. Anyway,
all right. So before we get into your situation.
Yes. What have you got for me?
Let's talk about something positive, which is Petrolbox. We were on the Discord, speaking of the Discord server, which is great. It's like forums. It's where one hangs out. A lot of people were talking, hey, I'm excited to use the discount code for Petrolbox because my brother's birthday is coming up and he would love that. And I agree. It would be super cool to give that as a gift, to receive Petrolbox as a gift. It's a monthly subscription made specifically for automotive enthusiasts, the car guy or girl in your life. Every month, they select cool, unique items to be sent right there to your doorstep. You get t-shirts, you get detailing supplies, you get tools, you get enamel pins and stickers and accessories.
Hats.
Yeah, it varies every month. And that's what's great. It's kind of like Christmas morning when they arrive. And it's as little as $19.95 for the Petrolbox Basic, and then $39.95 for twice the gear for the Petrolbox Premium is what they call it, of course, because it's petrol. So check them out at mypetrolbox.com. Use the code Overcrest. That'll get you the discount. Check it out. Really cool stuff. Cool guys. Cool product. We support them. We believe in it. That's why we talk about it.
Yes. All right. So took that Silverado down. Took Irene with me because she's cooler than you. And she road tripped down there with me, and we had a nice time. No electronics allowed on road trips, so she brought some books with her and read, and then we listened to an audiobook in the car, listened to some music, and hung out and talked. Great.
Quick question. Has she read your book?
They're not allowed to read my book yet.
Okay.
There's too many adult themes in there.
Correct. That's what I was curious about. Because I do know that Irene especially is very mature for her age.
Yeah, they both are. They could both read it. They're both capable of reading a chapter book like that.
But,
Not yet. Maybe when they're, thinking
in a year or two.
15, 16, they can read it.
Mm. Yep.
Not yet.
I remember reading, it's totally off topic, but I remember reading a book I shouldn't have in middle school. It was something about the Korean War, and it was like really heavy. And I still remember that because it did kind of leave an impact on me.
The same thing for me. I read The Gunslinger by Stephen King. Started my Dark Tower series reading when I was very young, probably around her age. And the first book is okay. You know, there's some violence and stuff like that, but it's more of a story of a man, like a man. And it's very like heady, but it's not weird. There's no bad things in it. And then you get to book two, which is called The Drawing of the Three. And there's some very adult themes, murder, rape, just things. Yeah. And I remember just being like 11 or 12 years old going, why would human beings do this to one another?
Yep.
And it was kind of like, wow. So yeah.
That's a good choice. That's a good choice. Yeah. Wait. Okay. Yeah. So
I'm
she was reading age appropriate books
she
on
was,
the way.
Yeah. Down. She was reading like a comic book. She likes graphic novels right now. So she's been reading, reading some graphic novels. Anyway, so I get down there, pull up, and here comes Ivan out to meet me.
Okay.
English, just okay.
Is this a shop or his house?
So this is it's like a car flipping dealership thing where they buy cars at auction, fix them up, and sell them.
Sure.
And the whole back of this place is like
parts.
Cars just being like torn apart. Just torn
it's
apart.
A chop shop, basically.
Oh, 100%. 100%. So anyway, so I found, let me say how I found this motor. So I'm surfing, you know, the ye old internet Facebook marketplace, looking for different things. I'm typing in S50, S52, S54. So where are the three motors I'm looking at? It is the first M-Power M engine that BMW ever made. Now there's this big debate about whether an M50 is actually an M engine or not, because it was in Europe, it was a much better engine. It had ITBs, was a different engine completely. We got some like kind of a shittier version of it. Is it actually an M engine? I don't give a shit. So anybody that wants to have that debate with me, I don't care. Don't even bother having the debate with me because I do not care.
This was in the E36 M3.
The E36 M3, 1995.
What about the E30, the four-cylinder? Was that not an M engine?
That is considered an M engine, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's its own unique platform engine.
Got it.
Versus the S50 is basically a high-compression cam version of the 325i. You know, so it's the same motor with just it's hopped up a little bit, which makes sense. That's what you would do if you were a company that wanted to make money. Because they didn't sell. The E30 M3 did not sell. It sold very poorly.
They were really expensive at the time.
They were expensive. They were weird. They were they didn't drive like a regular car. It was a race car.
Rev,
it was an homologation car. When the E36 M3 came out, BMW was determined to sell the car.
They needed
to sell the freaking car. So they basically made the E36 M3 much more pedestrian,
livable.
If you look over the course of the 90s, car of the year, best car ever. You should own one of these. Every magazine was that car, the E36.
That was the era of malaise. And so even though they toned it down, it was great.
And that was like my formative years, right? That period of time. So my uncle was a yacht broker in Annapolis and Baltimore. Yes. And he was very modest, but he was very wealthy. So he always had like a nice BMW, but he would drive that BMW until it was done. So he didn't lease one and buy a new one every year and all this other shit. But he always had like a nice BMW is what I thought. As far back as I can remember, he had an E34 Touring, which is the wagon.
That's cool.
And it was always an automatic, which I always thought was lame. But prior to that, he had like the CS, the 3-liter CS, like the shark nose looking thing. And he had like an AC Cobra back in the day, like a real one. It got stolen.
Wow.
I always thought he had good taste in cars. So as I'm growing up, I was really attracted. I was attracted to BMWs before. So I'm only telling you this story so you understand where I'm coming from with this engine.
Sure.
Why it wasn't just a random choice.
No, that makes sense.
So I grew up.
I'm curious. Your uncle, did you spend a lot of time with him? Did he influence your interest in cars a lot?
Yeah, not a lot. My interest in cars mainly came from grandpa working and digging and tuning on things. But in terms of who I thought had a cool car, Grandpa just had cars, and he worked on the cars. And he had a truck, and he worked on the truck. Nothing was cool, right? There was no cool. It was like a Mercury Grand Marquis, a Ford LTD, you know, like all these, like, kind of just, they're just cars.
Yep.
As far as I know, they were cars that he made my grandma drive. They could have afforded it. They could have bought a new car anytime they wanted. He was an engineer. She was the secretary.
But he was very pragmatic.
Yeah, big time. And my he ended up buying my grandma a Lexus, at, like a very new Lexus at one point, because she finally was like 70 years old and had enough. Anyway, so that was kind of like the utility of it. And that's where like the fixing of things came from for me. But the cool side was always growing up around, he always had a BMW. And I just remember thinking it was cool. And as a kid, you don't really have a definition of why it's cool. It just was. You know, I think it was the fact that he's always on sailboats. He had a nice house. He had the car, you know, and it was just kind of like this East Coast lifestyle.
Yeah, you looked up to him.
Yeah, I did. And I would always talk to him about cars. And I want a BMW when he would come over. And I remember, like, you know those pamphlets that you would get at the grocery store and you'd open it up and have all the cars in it? I remember opening one of those up and it had a white 325 IX, which is an E30, but it had
the old Car Trader,
the magazines,
like the newspaper print. Yeah,
they're still there. I think
are they?
I've seen a few here and there. I think it's more in smaller towns out in the West and the South.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I saw like this E30. It was white. It was at a car dealership, like 20 minutes away, and there was like this something in my mind convinced me that if I played my cards right, I could convince my grandfather, the most frugal, pragmatic guy ever, to buy it for me. And I was like 16 years old.
And looking back, you're like, how did that
ever
enter your
mind? There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
There's no world. There's no, you know, I believe in multidimensional reality and the multiverse. Okay. Yeah. None of those multiverses.
There's no reality.
There's no reality in which he bought me that car. None.
Yes. Okay.
Theoretically, so all realities are possible. Not this one. Okay,
that's the one.
So anyway, for some reason he's like, "Let's go look at it." So I'm like, "Oh my god, yeah, this is great!
It's happening!
This car,
yes,
this is awesome!" So we go and we look and we do a test drive, and I test drive this manual. And the only reason I knew how to drive is because I'd stolen his Mazda 626 out of the garage, and then my mom's boyfriend taught me how to drive stick on his truck in a parking lot. So I did know how to drive stick very early. And that was when I was like 13.
Yeah.
So I knew how to drive stick very, very, very early. So we drove it around and I was like, "What do you think?" And he's like, "It's a nice car. Let's go." I'm like, "What?" Like, what was he doing? He totally just like,
just toying with
you.
I
mean, cock blocked me to the maximum, you
know? That's funny.
Major blue balls, major blue balls. It was all the touching above the clothes and then nothing else. Awful. It was absolutely awful. So I didn't get the E30, but what I did get is it was ended up being around. Then I ended up driving their cars or whatever. You know, I didn't have a car, but then I got a Rabbit because he saw Y2K coming and he wanted a diesel Rabbit because it
That's
would survive the computer apocalypse.
The coming apocalypse. Yes.
So I went from seeing this BMW stuff and knowing what M3s were and going and getting the film with Clive Owen and Drive and from
That's
the BMW
right.
dealership.
Yeah.
And my buddy Joe at the time, Joe Pfeiffer, when I was growing up and worked at Best Buy with me, his dad was also really into BMWs and he had an E39 M5, right? Like all this stuff that kind of like happened over the course of time. And I ended up with a Volkswagen Rabbit diesel.
Yep.
So you it's kind of like getting going to dinner and someone orders you want the food that you see on the menu, but someone else orders for you and you get it. And you're hungry, so you eat it anyway.
Sure.
That's kind of what it was. It's like, I didn't really want it, but I could drop the clutch in first gear and it would spin a tire and make some noise. I kind of like adapted and fell in love with Volkswagens.
Here's the thing though. This is all good because how big of a dick would you have been had you been able to get that E30 that you wanted as your first car?
Yeah. Fucking A. What a ridiculous. Okay. So this is, you got to keep in mind, this car is only 5 or 6 years old in the mid to late 90s or whatever it was.
Yeah, I suppose. That's a newer car.
It's a newer BMW, right? It was newer. I would have been such a jerk off if he had bought me the car.
Oh,
I think it was
big
like,
time.
I think it was like $7,000 or something, too. It was like,
yeah.
Because it was pretty new. There's no world in which that ever should have or would have or could have happened. I'm glad it didn't. So I ended up with Volkswagens. So that's where like the fork in the road happened. Before that, it was all BMW all the time. I loved the style. I loved everything about them. And then I got the Rabbit and, you know, that changed everything. So I do have this desire for BMW. And I bought the E39 M5. I've had one of those. I've had an E30 Touring. I once test drove a 325 IS and E36 at a dealership and drifted it into a curb and drove it back with a bent rear subframe. Have I never told you that story?
No. Did what happened? Did the dealer not even know?
Yeah. Okay. So there was a green.
Hold on. What is the statute of limitations? Like how much time has passed here?
Enough time has passed. There was a green 325 IS for sale at Motorworks BMW here in Minneapolis. So this must have been like 2002, maybe 2003. All right. So this period of time, I'm like, I got to go look at that thing. I don't know if I saw it online or I used to just go to the dealership because you couldn't just look at there was no online. It wasn't as good as it is now. So you would just go look, what do they have for sale? So you go drive through the parking lot on a Sunday when they were closed, so nobody would bother you. Saw this car, went back probably Monday or Tuesday, or whatever. I want to test drive that. He said, okay. Photocopied my driver's license and my insurance card. I hop in this thing and I do not remember who was with me. It was probably my friend Jeff Keggy, who is the son of the drummer for a Night Ranger. It was kind of funny. Sister Christian.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
He's really into cars. I did him dirty a long time ago. He doesn't like me anymore. That's okay.
Not good.
I feel bad. Anyway, if you're never listening to this because you hate my guts now, I feel bad. Anyway, so me and Jeff, I think it was Jeff, were driving in this 325 IS. He had an Acura Integra GS at the time.
Sure.
The earlier one with like the dildo looking shifter. And so he had a much cooler car than me because I think I had a 1995 Volkswagen Passat at the time, which I got a Tectonics chip in. I was feeling pretty dope.
Ooh, was that the VR6? So I'm still just
No, 2 liter. Yeah. 2 liter, 8 valve. Yeah. Nope, no VR6.
And the Integra, that had a manual headlights, didn't it?
No, this is the
earlier.
This is the it's the later. It's I don't know what is that a B4? I think a B4 percent. Anyway,
no, I'm talking dealership. The Integra had the four headlights.
Oh yes, that yes,
yeah, yeah that was cool.
That was a cool was car. Cool. It was really cool, really expensive. I know he couldn't afford it. Although his dad was the drummer for Night Ranger.
Well, that's true. Famous song, and Sister the Christian gets played Sister a lot. Christian.
I went right, so I went to one of their concerts once, and I went backstage. And you think that rock star life is glamorous? And maybe it was in the 80s.
It ain't anymore.
Not when you're Night Ranger and you're 55 years old and
still
whatever.
Playing.
And but the thing is, I got to have. So you go in, there's always a white trailer, right? There's always like this white trailer. You go in, and it's sad because it's plastic white tables with plastic white chairs with nothing on them, no decorations. And on the corner of it is like this like food on plastic tables, and it's usually like the little like warmers underneath the little fire coming out. And I walk in there and I pull and I don't know vintage rock that well. Anyway, so I get my food, I go and I go, hey, can I sit here? And there's like three guys sitting at this table. They go, yeah. They're obviously a band. I sit down, I'm like, so who are you guys? They're like, oh, we're Boston. I'm like, holy shit, I'm having dinner with Boston, baby.
That's really
that was cool. That was the best thing that came out of me meeting Jeff. Yep. Anyway, so we get into this 325. And guess what? Boston, they're just normal dudes. They put their pants on like everybody else does. I get in this 325 IS, which I'm like, oh, this is an IS. It's got a limited slip. Dope. You know, you're all excited because it's like high perf. Like, let's go. Let's do this. Okay. And it's a manual. So I'm driving and I pull up to the stoplight and like an Oldsmobile Aurora pulls up next to me. And those actually had pretty decent power. I don't know what they had, but I think maybe they had the 3800. V6, which was a pretty decent hot motor. At the this context of
I know, I know.
Obviously, now I don't want an Oldsmobile Aurora engine. But at the time, I'm thinking, oh, that thing's pretty fast.
Goofy looking.
I mean, the guy looks over when he starts revving his engine. I'm like, fuck yeah.
Did they even come with a manual? I don't think they did.
No, absolutely not. This
So he was neutral.
Oldsmobile Aurora was a very nice luxury car, like plush interior.
Okay.
You don't know what an Oldsmobile Aurora is.
No, I do. Yeah, I can picture it.
Yeah, it's like a luxury.
They were very rounded looking.
Yeah, very egg-shaped. They look like an Oldsmobile Taurus, but nice. Kind of.
Oldsmobile Taurus. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Except that's the wrong. That's Ford versus GM. So
I'm going to race him.
Yes.
I'm going to race this dude. So yes. Light turns green, drop the clutch, first gear, let's fucking go. It is dead nuts. We're pacing each other. And we go about a block, and I'm in third gear, and the road turns to the left.
Uh-huh.
And his
which
front
side?
Wheel drive,
are you left
Aurora,
or right?
I'm turning to the left, and it starts to understeer.
Yeah.
And I lift off the throttle.
Yep.
And as soon as I lift off the throttle, the rear end comes around, it starts to snap to the right, and it goes all the way to the left and does a full 180 degree turn right into the curb, right into the rear wheel. And I go, that's not good.
No.
And I get out and I go and I look and the wheel is cocked. It is like, you can see where it hit the curb. The wheel is cocked under. And so I'm like, oh no, what am I going to do? I'm terrified. I'm so scared. I'm like 23 years old.
Okay. 23. Yeah.
Yeah. 23, probably 23, 22 years old. I just met Jesse. Everything was going great. Life was good. And I just fucked up this $10,000 E36 325
IS. You can't afford.
That I can't, definitely cannot afford. Yeah. So I get back in the car and I start driving. It's like, ka-ching, 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 and I'm sure the rear axle is just fucking foobarred, right? And I'm about like half a mile from the dealership. So I limp it back to the dealership. And when I there's like all the cars lined up. So I parked it really, really close to on the passenger side where all the cars are lined up. Like, so you can't like necessarily, I was thinking to myself, well, naturally, if it's that close, you're not going to want to walk around to that side of the car. You're not going to walk around. So Jeff like opens the door and like kind of shoehorns himself out of the car. And I go, the salesman comes up and he goes, hey man, what did you think? I'm like, dude, this thing is great. I'll let you know. And I took my driver's license out of my hands, gave him the key and fucking ran to my car, got in my car and drove away. And they call me and they're like, hey man, did anything happen with this car? And I just go, what do you mean?
Yeah,
hello?
Dumb.
Hello? I'm losing you. Click. No. And I hung up the phone and I never heard from him again. That's it.
I can't believe
that's the whole story.
I can't believe they didn't charge your insurance.
They didn't do anything. They did nothing. And I fucked that car up. I mean, that thing needed a new rear subframe, new axle, new hub, new wheel.
What speed do you think you hit that curb at?
Well, by the time I whipped around, not fast, maybe 7 or 8 miles per hour. It was all in slow motion, dude. It was all in super slow motion.
Oh, my God.
And that was the last BMW I drove for a really long time. And I never went back to Motorworks BMW to talk about buying a car ever to this day.
Again.
I won't go there. There's got to be like this Chris Kluel smash car.
Oh, yeah. You're on the board. Okay. So
needless to say,
this is
BMW
your BMW experience.
It's not something I'm pulling out of a hat because I think it would be, oh, this will be cool. The haters will love this. Ha ha. I'm putting a BMW engine in my Mercedes.
A little bit. You're doing that still.
I want this motor and I have this car. It's the same form factor. Let's do it. So anyway, okay. So I get over to Ivan. I look at the ad.
And for the record, I think it should be a period correct Mercedes motor. The C36 AMG with the carbs on the side would have been amazing.
That's not
just,
period
just
correct.
For
that
the
came
record.
Out 30 years later.
No, you're right. Okay, a correct for the manufacturer, right?
It's not any easier to put that motor in. It's the same amount of work.
Yeah.
Same. So why not
just
do something
for the record,
interesting?
Some people aren't going to like this, obviously.
I don't.
And I don't either.
How much do you think I care? Yeah, on a scale from 1 to 10.
Honestly, I think that empowers you even more that you know people don't like it. And the more people are going to be like, this is dumb. You're going to be like, yep.
It's not why, but
I know.
But sure.
You're not in it for the haters. But
I'm not. That's not why I'm doing it. I just want to make, I told that whole story
just
to understand
that
I'm not
the
trying
context.
To just, it's not an algorithm for the gram thing. I'm doing it because I want to do it. I want this. I wanted one of these engines my whole fucking life.
Yep.
And I can't afford any E36 M3 anymore. So yeah. I got one of the motors. So anyway, so this motor, I look it up. It's on Facebook Marketplace. He's got videos
Find
of
Ivan.
Running.
Yep.
He's got videos of each cylinder's compression number, which is 185 to 180 across the board.
Nice.
Which is great. The cutoff limit for a rebuild is 150 in the manual. So it's got great compression. I'm like, what could go wrong? This is great. And it comes with drive shaft, transmission, engine harness, ECU. It's everything I need.
It's all there.
I feel like God himself was like, I'm sorry, here you go. Right? I feel like it was meant to be. So I'm like, Ivan, I'm buying this motor. I will see you tomorrow. So I rent that Silverado, drive down there. I get out. There's the motor sitting on a pallet with the transmission still attached to it. The guy took the time to pull it out. He didn't cut a single wire. The whole harness is right there. It's all still plugged in. I'm like, dude, this is so good. Let's do this. Put it on the forklift, throw it in the back of the truck. In the back of my not new to me rented brand new Silverado. So we strapped it all down. You know, I try to be really careful not to scratch the bed of the truck, and I did a great job. I didn't fuck the truck up.
That's nice.
Got all the way home, unloaded it. Dude, I am on cloud nine. I'm like, this is going to be great.
Yep.
I start getting messages from people. Oh, you're going to need to change this. You're going to need to change that. And then pretty soon, like, this trickle of advice and information on social media turned into like this deluge, tsunami. Have you ever seen like guys that shotgun beers?
Yeah.
Like they like smash it on their face and then they just like pour the entire. Okay. That's what it was like. But like fans of BMWs were really excited that I was doing this. They're like super excited. Like, oh my God, I have. And everybody has all this knowledge. And that is what's wild. Is when you look at the amount of knowledge, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It is hard to deal with because I don't know what's right and what's wrong. I'm going to have to figure it out for myself. But there's like the amount of information I've been given is like, I can't even begin to remember it all. Like we're talking hundreds and hundreds of DMs from people that love BMW that think that they know, which they probably do from their own personal experience, what I should do. Yep. Like, holy shit. It's just absolutely overwhelming. Anyway, what was I saying? I lost my train of thought.
You're starting to just take it apart or look at
anyway,
it.
Anyway, there was something else that I was going to mention, but I don't remember what it
was. Well,
anyway,
so what everyone was saying you had to do, right? So what was the thing you thought you had to do?
Anyway, so I get it unloaded out of the car and in a truck, and I bring it in, and I set it down. I'm like, this is great. I start finding out all the things I have to do. I need to do an oil pan because it moves the oil pan sump from the front to the rear, or from the rear to the front, sorry. Otherwise, it's going to run into my my drag
link.
So guys do that swap. So I called the junkyard, got one of those coming. And then I started kind of trying to, in my mind to aggregate everything everyone has said.
Okay.
And everything I know, because I'm not an idiot. I pay attention. Okay. So I know that Vanos is a problem. Yes. I know that cooling issues with BMWs are a problem. Everybody knows that, right? You know that.
Sure.
They blow up. They blow head gaskets. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They overheat. They blow head gaskets. And the radiator fan, warp heads, clutch fan, they fail. They don't work. It's a huge problem, the cooling system on these cars. Everybody blows head gaskets or warps the head or whatever. So I order water pump. I order Vanos rebuild kit. I order a clutch, flywheel. I order a lightweight flywheel to go from 26 pounds down to 13 pounds. I order, dude, I ordered so much fucking shit. I ordered $2,000 worth of shit from FCP Euro. Like everything. I'm like, I don't want this thing to be unreliable. I'm going to do it all. I ordered an extra coil pack just in case one of the coil packs goes bad.
Sure.
I want to be so set that when this thing finally runs, I'm like, great. This thing runs. Good. Fuel done. Injection. Dialed I've replaced in. Everything. Yep. I've done all the wear things. Let's go. So I start pulling things apart and I go, why is there, this is really confusing. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is, I go to pull a spark plug, and I pull the coil pack off. I'm going to go through this whole thing with you, okay?
Yep, I like it.
I pull the coil pack off. There's water in where the spark plug goes.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm like, how did water get in there? Well, that sucks. That's stupid. They all have water in them. Every single one.
Yep.
So get the air hose.
Would be like, maybe he was washing gunk
power
off.
Washing it, whatever.
Exactly.
Clearly he power washed it. I power washed it. I was careful. Okay. I know what I'm doing. I put plastic over things. I'm careful. I know what's up.
Got it. Yeah. But that's probably what it was. Sure.
That's probably what that was. There's water in there. Fine. I don't give a shit. Grab the little air hose. Spray those out.
Yep. Spray it out.
I'm like, man, that's weird. So because I'm doing a valve cover gasket is what I'm starting to do.
Okay. I was like, why are you taking plugs off? And Yep.
Because the valve cover gasket clearly leaks. And they're magnesium valve covers.
Oh, that's cool.
They corrode and they don't seal right. So I'm pulling it off. I'm going to put some RTV on it, seal it back up. I pull it off and I look and I'm like, there's a little bit of rust under this valve cover. Like a little bit on the cam lobe, a little bit on one of the adjuster things. I'm like, why is there rust? And it's the rust that wipes off. You know what I mean? Like it's
flash rust, basically.
Flash rust. And that's usually from some sort of moisture.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That's odd.
Maybe that's just, that can be from sitting, right? So moisture gets in through like whatever. You know, you have a breather, moisture gets in, it sits, moisture collects on things, it can flash rust. No big deal. This motor was sitting for a while. What happened was a tree fell on this car. Oh. And then it got totaled out. So it was a running car before a tree fell on it. So I'm like, it's a running car. I saw it run. No big deal. It's no problem. Right. Especially since I asked Ivan if he drove it. And he said, yes, he did burnouts in the parking lot. And I said, well, this dude is honest. At least he's honest with me.
What part of the car did the tree hit? Like I'm picturing like there's no room to drive, but Ivan's like going like this doing burnouts.
Well, he
like,
replaced
crunched
roof.
Over.
He replaced
oh,
the
he
roof.
Did.
Yeah, but then he couldn't get not a salvage title, so that's why he's parting it up.
Oh, I get
so
it.
I saw all the body work he did. It looked great. He had a new roof on the car.
That's
bummer,
sucks,
right?
But
bummer.
Yes.
Good for me, bad for him, bad for me, good for whatever. Whatever you want to call it at this point, now that we all know what happened.
I don't know if it's good for anyone, but
so
yes.
I start, you know, taking I also bought like an oil filter housing gasket kit. So I'd already replaced the water pump. The coolant looked clean, it was fine. Pull the pump out, green coolant came out of there. I'm like, oh, that's good.
Nice.
You know, there's not, it's not all full of oil or anything. Great.
Yep.
And I bought like a $200 water pump. This is the water pump to have. This is the one. You got to have this one.
This is the good one. Yep.
This is the good one. It's like the jet engine of water pumps. I don't know. So I pull this oil pump housing off of this thing and I pull the filter out.
Uh-huh.
And the filter, it is the forbidden latte, as I now know it is called.
Yes. The
and it is milky.
Yes.
And I go, motherfuck.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God.
So
if there's oil in the filter housing, it had to have run. That's not from pressure washing. That's not from sitting out in the rain. It had to have pumped the coolant and the oil together through the filter housing to get oil there.
Yep. I was just going to say, for those that may not know, what is a milkshake? What are you referring to?
Oh,
so the oil comes out.
The oil mixes with water, it turns into a milkshake. Just like when you put Hershey's into your milk and
more
mix
or
it
less.
Up.
It doesn't look like
that.
Oil.
It turns the oil
and
like milky
doesn't...
white. Depending on the color of your coolant, it can turn it pink, whatever. Especially if it's old oil, it gets to like a really dark milkshake. This was brand new oil. Okay, so the oil is not brown or used.
It was like
in
a
any
light
way.
Roast. Milkshake.
It was a light roast, yeah. Light roast milkshake, which is kind of like, I'm thinking, I'm trying to analyze positives and negatives here. So I go, okay, it had a fresh oil change and then something happened.
And then happened. Yes.
And this happened. So I'm like trying to think, I saw a video of it running. It had good compression numbers.
Mm-hmm.
If it had a popped head gasket or a warped head, the compression numbers wouldn't have been good and it wouldn't have run properly. So
yeah,
because it would be down a cylinder because the cylinder would be full of water. Or the head is cracked and it's pumping coolant into the oil through a crack in the cylinder head and it's not in the combustion chamber because I'm sorry to jump around. When you blow a head gasket on a car and it goes into the combustion chamber, it will steam clean the top of the piston and the combustion chamber. It was not like that.
It'll be shiny. Yes.
And this is a conclusion I'm coming to right now. I bet there's a crack in the cylinder head somewhere that I have to find and figure out where it is. I'm going to take it to a head shop and figure out how the coolant got in there. Because
it wasn't warped. None of it was warped either.
It's not warped. It's not warped. So the cylinder's not warped. So
the oil filter. Let me ask you, though.
Yeah.
The oil filter console that you're mentioning, that you're going to do a new gasket, is that also where the oil cooler is? Like, is it an integrated cooler where
that's
it runs
Volkswagen
coolant?
Thing. I've been asked that a lot. That doesn't exist on this.
You know what I'm talking about. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't see anything like that. So it's not mixing that way. Definitely a thought I had. It's a good idea, but no. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but it happened.
Okay.
So I change. I go to drain the oil, and it glorps out. Glorp is the word that I would use to describe it.
Yes.
And at this point, I'm texting Ivan, being like, "Dude, why is there water in this crankcase?
Everywhere." Yeah.
And the response I expect to get is, "I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah.
As is." And he responds, "Oh no. I am so sorry. I didn't know." And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, how do you not know? How do you not know? Did you know this happened?
Because you can see that on the dipstick too, by the way.
I looked at the dipstick. The first thing I did, and there wasn't anything on the dipstick. So
it
was like,
interesting.
Just below, like, I don't know.
Hmm.
Didn't see anything on the dipstick. It's strange because it wasn't super mixed. Like there was oil separate from water. I don't know what happened.
Did it like just happen?
I think he was doing burnouts in the parking lot of the place. And
it's in the oil filter, it had to have circulated, meaning it had to run that way.
I think he did a burnout, popped the head gasket, and then took the motor out. That's what I think happened.
That would maybe explain the lack of a clean piston too.
Yeah.
It wasn't running long enough to clean it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Theory?
You would see that. You would see it. He would have known because it would have been pluming white smoke. I don't know exactly what happened here. And I'm conflicted on whether I trust Ivan or not. But I'm leaning towards trusting him, and this is why. So I pulled everything apart, looked up to pull the oil pan off, and I go, Ivan, there's a ton of water in this crankcase. There's flash rust inside on the block of the crankcase. All the bearings look good. I pulled the bearings. Everything looks great from that perspective.
Good.
He goes, what do you want me to do? And I said, well, I think this motor is basically a core. Okay, it needs to be. It is basically, in my mind, it's a core motor. It's probably worth $600. I go, what do you think is fair? And he goes, I'll send you $1,500.
Wow.
And I went, okay, that sounds great. And like the honor and honesty of him doing that leads me to believe that he didn't know that it was bad.
Right.
Or he just would have told me. He just would have said it.
Right.
So he sent me the money. He sold me the money. He gave me the whole package was $3,800. He gave me $1,500 back. So almost, you know, 35-40% of the money back. And with that money, I can make the engine right again.
Sure.
And then I'll have a rebuilt cylinder head. I'm going to rehone the cylinder walls. I've got a lot of advice.
Are you going to pull the pistons in order to do that?
Yes. I'm going to pull the pistons out. Yeah, I should, right? Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm going to pull the pistons out. I could put them at the bottom and then just redo it that way.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
I think it's at this point, it's pretty easy to pull them out. Just pull
true.
The bearings
you already
off
have the pan off. You have everything off.
It's better to just do it
and
that.
And you're gonna do rings then, I suppose, if you're pulling those.
I got some advice to not do the rings.
Interesting.
Just to leave the rings there, unless I ended up needing
seeing something. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I need to hone it. Look, because there's corrosion on the combustion chamber. There was some rust. There was water in the combustion chamber. 100%. I saw it. There was rust dripping down.
See, that doesn't make sense. I was going to say maybe in the head gasket, it didn't go into the actual cylinder, but it broke between an oil passage and a water passage.
Very
but
possible.
But then it shouldn't have gone in the cylinder.
All things are possible at this point. Anyway, that's where we're at. I got the cylinder head off. Hopefully this afternoon, if I can quit talking to you soon, I can go take the cylinder head. I don't know where my wife is. She's fucking gone. So I'm going to have to grab the kids. We're going to throw the cylinder head in the trunk, and I'm going to take it down to my buddy Tom at Cylinder Head Service. This is a great story.
Now, have you talked to Tom? Because last I heard from you, we don't know if Tom is still doing this.
I think he's still doing it, and I love Tom. You know what's funny is I had a bunch of people be like, what do you mean it's $1,000 to do a cylinder head? I could have it done for $400 to $600.
Okay.
And I'm trying to imagine what that includes, because when I've gone to Tom, 15 years, I took a 16-valve engine. To Tom,
Volkswagen,
15, 20 years ago, dropped it off. He redid the whole thing. It needed some new valves, and he did the whole thing. It was like $900. This is 15 years ago. I paid $900.
So ooh,
but it is perfect, right? Yeah. It's perfect, everything is done perfectly. Like the guy's neurosis almost makes it worth the money because I know how well it's done. He does like a three-angle valve job on everything.
That's cool.
It's just like, I mean, it's just perfect. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, hopefully Tom's there so I can bring a Chevy head to him.
Yeah. It's like, what do you want, the best job or do you want the cheap job? That's probably okay. Or do you want to pay the money and know it's 100% done correctly?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's going to look like a brand new cylinder head. It'll look brand new, like straight out of the factory. It's going to look perfect. Anyway, so I took this 16 valve head to him, had it redone completely, paid $900, took it home, threw it on Jesse's car, and dropped a washer into the timing belt, tried to start it, and bent all the valves in the head. Because that thing was 12.5-to-1 compression. It was a serious motor. Pull the head off, take it back to Tom. He goes, if you pay for the valves, I'll do it for free.
Wow.
So I bought the valves, gave it to him, and he dialed me in 100%. He's quality. He's a really good dude. I hope he's still there. This is 15 years ago. He's a happy guy, too. I really like how happy he is.
That's
the problem is he's in the doldrums of crime-ridden North Minneapolis now, or Minneapolis, so it's not a good area. I don't know if he's still there. I got to find out. So I'm going to take the cylinder head to him, pay what it's going to cost to have him do it, because I trust him, even if it's, unless it's like $1,500. Then I'm going to be like, I don't know about that. We'll see. That's where I'm at. I don't have anything else to say. We'll see how things go. You know, one thing I wanted to, actually, one thing I want to mention. People don't understand why I'm not more frustrated and angry.
Okay.
Because, yes. like, there is a little bit of, like, woe is me. Why is this happening to me? Like, yeah. this is the third engine that will be in this car, and it's fucking broken. First engine, broken. Second engine was shitty. By the way, I called the company that I got the second engine from that I paid $2,000 for. Hold on, I need a drink. And okay. he basically said, go fuck yourself. And yeah. I said, I've already got all the paperwork typed up to sue you in small claims court. He's like, and I'm shortening this conversation up a little bit. He's a little bit like, fuck you. And he's a little bit like, uh-oh. And because I have like all the text messages of everything I sent him with all the pictures. Yeah. It's all documented. Yep. It's all in writing. And I go, dude, if I don't get my money back by Monday, Tuesday, he has Cash App. He can just send me the money.
Okay.
I'm going to file this paperwork to sue. I'm going to get on a fucking plane. I'm going to fly down there, and I will see you in small claims court. He's like, you'll never win. I've been doing this for 20 years. I said, man, right here. And I sent him a screenshot of him saying 2-month warranty. And then me going, the motor's bad. What do I do? Hello, 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 hello for like 2 months. I'm
yeah.
like, I'll win. I'd rather get the money back. And guess what? If I'm going to sue you, I'm going to do. And I'm not like a sue happy guy, but this guy really pissed me off.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to do it for $3,500. You know, like, what are we going to do to make, if he would have just been like in the beginning, if he would have like tried to talk to me and we could have worked something out. So I go, I do not want to do this. I don't want to do any of this. I just want to, what is, and of course this conversation that I'm having about suing this guy was long after he ignored me, wouldn't answer my calls, wouldn't take my calls. This is way beyond me doing my due diligence to get this taken care of in an amicable way. I said, let's do this. You talk to your boss. He always says, there's the boss. I think he's the boss, but I think he says, I'm going to talk to the boss as like an excuse.
Oh, yeah.
I said, let's do this. You give me half my money back and we can walk away from this. And everybody's, I suffer a little bit. You suffer a little bit and it's all done. You know, that's some of the best compromises are nobody's happy, but everybody
I've heard
got
that before,
right?
You know, a deal is fair when everyone's not 100% happy.
That's and that's what it is. And I don't want to do this. I want part of my money back. That's all I want. I want.
Yeah.
If I can get $1,000 back from that, I would be happy. Look, it's a 40-year-old engine. Shit happens. I understand.
Right, but the fact he said 2-year warranty, and that's why you paid
2 month
a premium, regardless.
Yeah. That's why I paid for it, whatever. But as long as I can get some money back and we can come sort of compromise, I'm good. I'm not out to get anybody, but I also don't need any more suppositories. On that note, we will see you guys next week. I don't know what's going on. We got a couple interviews that I'm talking to people on, so don't forget.
I
not doing interviews.
And history stories that are also in the works. Yeah. All right. Well, I want to hear this country song about the truck.
Okay, I'll get it going. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Take care.
Most alone. I like to get lost on some old back road, find a shade tree and a honey hole, and talk to my grandpa again. And I see God in everything, trees and pain and knots in the spring. So